Hello there. You're very welcome to Burning Books. Joining me today is director of the Dublin Book Festival, Julianne Mooney-Siron. She's been programming the festival since 2010 and is looking forward to a jam-packed programme this November. I know that you are the youngest of five children, so you were the baby in the family. What was that like growing up when you were a little girl, back to your early years?
So I've got two older brothers and two older sisters and myself. And I guess our house was always very much the house that people gathered in. My brothers would have always had their friends over, and Philip had like a little mini snooker table in his room. So all the boys would have the music blaring and the snooker table going. And, you know, us all, the younger ones, would be gathering outside the door just to hear what was going on. And sometimes you'd be allowed to go in and sit in and chat. But it was a very, very busy household. It was a lot of fun. Like my memories, my dad trained rugby. And so he had a blue hi-ace van that he carted all the rugby boys around in. And, you know, sometimes they'd come back and there'd be McDonald's bags in there. And we'd be like, "You took the boys to McDonald's? You'd never take us to McDonald's." But it was, we loved when dad would just throw us all in with the dog and mum, and we'd go driving around on the weekends and go away for a weekend. You know, it was busy and fun and, you know, just chaotic. I can't even imagine how my mom kept a hold of it. You know, in the summer, we had a summer project in Greystones. I grew up in Greystones by the sea, and you know, it's the village is not what it is now. So back then it was a small village. We knew everyone. There was the main street, and there was the summer project. And somehow my mother obviously didn't think she was busy enough, but she would help with the summer project. So every day for the 2 weeks of the summer project, kids who had signed up to some sort of a course would come over to our house and we'd all be baking. So mum would be teaching them how to bake and we'd be her little helpers. And, you know, I'd have to take care of the flour and, you know, you'd be kind of handing things out. So my memory is just chaos. We had lots of rescue animals. We had a nice big garden, so we were lucky in that way. You know, in the summer we'd put up our tent and we were very lucky.
Yeah, you're painting a gorgeous picture actually of like chaos, yeah, but like warmth and the good kind of chaos. Is there a big age gap between you? Are you all quite close in age then? It sounds like you were kind of a close unit.
Yeah, so my eldest brother would be 8 years older than me, and then we're kind of staggered down. So my sister and I, Rachel, there was only like, we were Irish twins, so there's only a year, pretty much a year and a couple of months between us. So we would have, I suppose we would have been very much our own little unit. And then my sister was the middle child, but she was almost like the eldest child because she had to take care of the little sisters. And my brothers, you know, when other friends weren't there, I guess I remember them like using us as rugby balls and throwing us and and messing around and always beating us up. They were kind of probably older. And as we grew older, that age probably showed the difference, you know, became bigger, where they were in their bedroom playing snooker with their friends, where we weren't allowed in. But, you know, we were very lucky to have the neighbours that we had and the fun and the adventures.
It just sounds, I was going to say, are there rose-tinted glasses? Because it sounds like something out of The Railway Children or something. It just sounds absolutely lovely. Yeah.
You know, when I was thinking on, you know, books, I remember like reading The Famous Five as a child and thinking, oh, I could really relate to The Famous Five because, you know, their adventures were kind of similar to us. I could imagine us doing it, you know, we'd build dens and we'd build you know, treehouse. My brothers built treehouse in this tree. Like nowadays you wouldn't have it. I don't know how we didn't all die. And it was very much the case. My mum would go, "Get out of the house and I'll see you for dinner," and off we go. So it was books like that I, you know, I remember specifically reading and thinking, oh, it's like the adventures we have.
And Julianne, do you remember when you started reading yourself?
Books have always just been there. My mum is an avid reader, so she would have read, I don't know where she found the time of five children, but like I would remember lying in bed at night and hearing pages turning and hearing my mum's glasses, you know, the sound of the arms of the glasses closing. I'd remember on a Sunday morning, we weren't allowed to go near mum into the bedroom. Dad would have the door closed and he'd bring her a cup of tea and some toast, and she'd lie in bed reading. And like, I think as the youngest, I was a nightmare. I'd be sitting outside the door going, "Mummy, are you ready?" But I remember my mum with her head in the book. And when we were on holidays in the evening, she'd have a glass of wine and her book there, reading amongst the chaos. It's always been in my life. Very much, I think, because, Rachel and I were closer. Mum would go between our bedrooms and Rachel and I would lie in the bed with mum and she'd read us our goodnight story. So we'd take turns in whose room and whose book, what book was going to be chosen. So from a very early age, and then the library we were in the library every single week. From when I remember, we'd just go in, mum would be like, "Off you go, get a book." And she'd be gone into the adult section, and that was that. We'd meet at the desk.
And it sounds like there's just a whole plethora of books then at that time. Like if you're going to the library and you're borrowing, you're bringing back, and you've got older siblings as well. So I suppose there's all of their books, and your mom has her books. So is there like it's maybe just too hard a question to pick one from that like span of time. And I'm sort of thinking from your primary school years, that kind of before you start into the kind of more adolescent reading and anything. Even if there's just something that sticks out in your memory more than others from that time, what would it be?
Well, I guess the famous five, so Enid Blyton, and Anne of Green Gables. So I don't know what age I would have been reading that, but I remember my mom, I think Ashton, my sister, had read it, and I took it and I read it. And there was a series though, and I think, wasn't there a series of them? And I think that was my first look into like the famous five or Enid Blyton's. I could relate to, I could see, but I remember Anne of Green Gables being. There was a wooden house, and it was kind of a little more foreign and a little bit different, and I loved it. I remember crying at it, I remember not wanting it to end, so that is even now, like I should go back and just read it just simply to see, and I know, with the series, I remember just wanting to read more and know more, so that would be certainly one that I always remember.
There was a TV, I don't mean the recent one, but I mean years ago there was an adaptation for TV. I don't know whether it was a film or what it was. I remember watching that when I had the flu or something like that after reading the books. I can totally understand what you're saying about that sort of slightly exotic. I mean, not that it was exotic, but
Exactly.
that it was like a girl, and it was her. Yeah, I agree with you with all of that, really. It was that it's just and that's a lovely time of life to read it as well. Yeah. I don't know, would you go back and read it? Because it would just, I think maybe it would just leave it in, leave it in the inner world the way it is. It's probably does no harm. Like,
Exactly. And it's probably like you say, rose-tinted glasses. You look back, with fond memories, but let's say of my crazy household, you kind of forget all the arguments and the screaming and the fighting that I can only imagine happened every hour. And Anne of Green Gables, I could go back and go, "Really? This is very dated."
yeah, I remember going back to read The Secret Garden when I first had, when I had my first baby. I was like, oh, I'm going to all the books that I loved in childhood, and I remember reading the start of The Secret Garden and thinking, how did I manage to get into that? Like, I loved that book. I loved it. And yet the start is so, these days I don't think a child would maybe have the patience to kind of get through pages and pages of the beginning. And I was like, I don't remember this at all. It was very like, and I didn't stick with it. I didn't read on, but maybe I should have. But I think I just happier keeping it the way it
Keep
was.
the
Do you know what I mean?
memory. Yeah,
Yeah. I'm just building up this lovely picture of your Greystone's life and your mom and your dad bringing her tea in the morning and everything else. So as you kind of went into your teenage years, did things change for you? Did you still feel, were you a happy teenager? Was life easy for you? And what kind of books then were you gravitating towards around then?
I think as the youngest of five as well, I think, my family would laugh. Because I'd probably be the most laid back of all of them as the youngest. Now they'd always say, "Oh, well, Julianne was mum's favorite." And I think of myself as being, the hand-me-down clothes. I never got my own clothes, I never got my own things. I slept in a cupboard pretty much. So you kind of have those thoughts. But I was a very happy child in my memory. I don't remember my teenage years being any more difficult than any other of my, friends or siblings. I remember listening to, I'd always listen to music. My dad would have been the big music person. So he used to go into one of the rooms at night. It was probably only half an hour, but again, you think this is obviously my dad's time and he'd play music and he'd have it going. But he loved like things like Phantom of the Opera and a lot of musicals and Pavarotti. And I actually grew to love that sound because dad would be in there and it kind of calms me and it brings me back to dad. And he'd always, after we'd go to bed, he'd put the music on and mum and dad would talk. And if you crept down at night, you'd hear the music. And sometimes I'd just sit outside and I'd listen. So that was, I think going to bed at night, I'd often listen to my tapes and then read. And when the light had to go off, you'd listen to the music quietly. Books wise, I was trying to think of this and I don't remember any particular books that jumped out at me that weren't really involved, or maybe I was introduced to them via school. So we were reading Charles Dickens, we were reading Jane Eyre. There was a lot of, I suppose, English authors that I was reading at that time, and it would have been more literary. So that was probably my first step into the literary world as such, and kind of stepping back in time, which I actually really enjoyed. And I probably had never experienced that before. I remember Wuthering Heights, and my sister was obsessed with Wuthering Heights, and wasn't it Kate Bush's song? We all loved that song. But I remember reading it and thinking, God, this is so dark. But I couldn't stop reading it because Aisling had read it and was obsessed with it. And I do think my sister's reading at the time would have certainly influenced me because, you would have just taken the books that she had and I would have read them. And then we were reading the likes of them in school. So that was probably a move into my. I love kind of historical fiction and going back and learning about particular times. And that was probably my first step and into the past.
You didn't read any Georgette Heyer by any chance, did you?
No.
No. Actually, that literally just popped into my head. I'd completely forgotten all about her. Like historical fiction, but kind of like, I don't know, kind of very Moorish, a bit commercial. Can't remember if it was a bit racy, but like it might have been racy in the sense of, oh, an ankle is showing under the petticoat, ma'am, getting under the carriage or something. I can't remember. But I just like sprang into my mind because I know what you mean about the historical fiction. And yeah, I was just thinking Georgette Heyer and some of the, and I'm not talking like 19th century novels, I'm talking like something different. But like, did you have any inkling that you would end up working in books when you were in school and you're thinking about college and stuff? Were you thinking, oh, I can see my life with books? Or was it not even on the radar at that point? Like, what did you want to do? Like around 16, 17, 18, when you're thinking of leaving school and stuff, did you have an idea? What were
I wanted to, what did I want to do? I loved travel. And I guess books had introduced me to all these different worlds. And I think anyone who loves to read would say that books, they are a step into another world. They transport you, they're a form of escapism, but they're also a form of learning. It's how we learn about different countries. So I would certainly have around then. I've started reading books by kind of for the first time that weren't born in Ireland or England. So I was suddenly getting a glimpse into all these different worlds, and travel was then up there. I wanted to travel. I kind of went into doing science, but the only reason why I went into science was because I loved geography and I loved learning about all these different worlds. So after that, in college, I transferred into geography and sociology. And I was also really interested in psychology, relationships. And so that was always something that I wasn't sure what my job would be, but I kind of that they were my main interests. So I guess I would have started reading just about the different countries and wanting to travel more. And then I got the travel bug and that was that.
And so did you go off traveling then after college? Is that what you, did you kind of take a few years to kind of?
Yeah, so we did the usual kind of what age would we have been? 19. We went over to America to Montauk, and worked there for the summer with like a massive gang of us. The typical Irish thing, there was 15 of us in a two-bed house. And then after college, I went to Australia for a year and then traveled down to New Zealand and loved it and ended up staying for 7 months and living in New Zealand and then traveling back through Asia for probably 3 or 4 months. And then maybe a couple of years later, I felt I hadn't done some of the countries I wanted to do. So I left work and I just went traveling on my own. And my father nearly had a nervous breakdown. And I just said, look, I want to go to Vietnam and I will figure it out from there. And I flew into Vietnam and I can still remember arriving and the noise and the chaos and staying in a hostel and thinking, what have I done? I know no one. I'm here on my own. This is absolute madness. And then I ended up traveling for 4 months. So I did Vietnam and Cambodia and Thailand and Indonesia and just had the time of my life.
That's really kind of character forming, isn't it? That kind of experience.
You know, at that time, Ireland was such a small island and it was made up of just Irish. My sister married a Mitch, so he's from the Caribbean, St. Kitts. So when he came to Greystones, he literally was the only black person people had seen. And, you know, Mitch is such a warm and lovely and funny character. He'd be like, I remember saying one Christmas, oh, Mitch, you wear such bright colors. They look so cool on you. No one in Ireland wears bright colors. And he just suddenly looked at me and went, that's why everybody looks at me. And I was like, yeah,
Brilliant.
it. So I met different people and from different countries. I traveled with a girl from Australia, another one from New Zealand. And then we met a big group of people from like America, Canada, all these different nationalities. And it was that I loved and my way of learning about the different countries. And, you know, it's something I would really encourage Jack to do because it opens your mind and your world.
And were you exposed then to lots? I mean, of course, you could be exposed to that anywhere, but as you were traveling and everything, were you exposed to kind of world literature, literature from other places? Like, were people recommending different novelists or different books to you from your kind of friend group then? And were you kind of going, oh, this is someone I haven't come across?
Yeah, absolutely. We used to, because you had no money when you were traveling and you always had books, you know, no matter what, there's in no matter what time in my life, where I was, there was always a book in my bag. And to be honest, you know, I've never been a picky reader or like, oh, I'm not going to read that or I won't, you know, it's if you give me a book and it's my time, you know, I'll just read it. I remember one girl, Fiona, she was Australian and we did a lot of travel together. I think we went most of Vietnam and then all of Cambodia together and into Thailand. And she loved reading as well. And in Thailand at that time, I'm sure they still have them. You go into the secondhand shops and the books would be, you know, 2 euro. So you'd bring your book and you'd swap it. So you just do a little book swap. Or if you're in the hostels, everyone was just swapping their books. And there was always, you know, I was trying to think of what was that one? The Beach. Everyone
Oh,
loves,
yeah.
you know, those kind of books. You know, there was always the popular books that at the time of travel, the people are like, have you read this? But it was often related to Asia where we were traveling that you wanted to learn about what happened in those countries at different times. Or I'm trying to think, there was one a book in Cambodia and I cannot remember the name of it. And it was based in Phnom Penh and it was all about Pol Pot's regime and it was about a family from Cambodia. And I read it. Someone gave it to me in Vietnam, said, read this before you go. And I remember reading it and being so horrified. And we got a boat from Vietnam into up the was the Mekong and we arrived in this field in Cambodia and we stepped out of the boat and we walked from the pathway was Vietnamese and there were Vietnamese guards there and then we walked across a gate into another field and this was Cambodia and I can still remember there was probably around 15 children lined up and you've never seen happier more loving children. They were just smiling and laughing and so excited to see us. And I had my camera and they just wanted their photo taken and you know, then they'd be able to see what they looked like. But they were so lovely and there was a warmth about them. And I thought, oh my God, these people, like these children's families have gone through something so recent, like was maybe at that time, it had only been 30 years previous. I might be wrong, but I remember thinking it's within their family's generation. And yet they were so warm, so friendly, so open, and was quite a contrast to Vietnam, where I found the people quite, closed and quite cold. Whereas Cambodia was, it was just different. From the second I walked across that gate, it was different. But I would never have known that had I not read this book.
But that's a really interesting way of reading, isn't it? To kind of, you're sort of foreshadowing your own experience of a place like that. Again, the way you're describing the year or two or three or however long it was of travel, are you predisposed to be a really sort of op I don't want to say the word, I don't mean positive, but like sometimes when people look back on their childhood or back on whatever years, they pick out things, or oh, and then this, oh, and then I lost my passport, or and they pick, but you seem to be picking out all the kind of joy, like of all of it. Like I can nearly feel I'm going with you into that. Like, can sort of imagine myself in the dorm with the books being passed from rucksacks and the kind of just that youthfulness of it all. It just sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I think it'd be my natural disposition to be, the glass is half full. And, my friends and my family would always say that. I still remember, and I laugh, my mom, we were all sitting around the kitchen table, and everyone's like, "What am I good at, mom? What am I good at?" So she went through my brothers, you're good at rugby, and David was good at maths, and Ashton was just brilliant at everything. And Rachel, always very bright. And then she came to me, and I was like, "Mummy, what am I good at?" And there was silence. And I can still remember my brothers and sisters in hysterics laughing, going, "Oh my God, she doesn't know what she's good at." And mum was like, "You're a survivor." I was like, "A survivor?" So I was disgusted with this. I think I stormed off crying, but and now, we'd laugh. Mum was like, "Julianne, what better compliment?" I was like, "But you could have said I was good at English. I loved writing. I love reading." And she was like, "Yeah, but it was the thing that came into my mind."
I feel like bursting into song now, but I'm not going to do I'm a survivor. But yeah, but I mean that's great. That's like saying, yeah, you're a warrior. You're like, oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, maybe that was a stamp then on you kind of carried. But so what brought you back to Ireland then? Like you had the travel bug and everything else. What brought you home or
Well, when I came home for a while, and then I moved to London with a friend. A friend was living in London, so I moved over to London for 2 years. And then, actually, my mom had gotten sick. She had like just she'd been in hospital and everything. And I kind of thought, I could stay in London and keep going. And while we were in London, we would have done travel, so we went to India and we went over to South America, and we were doing all of that. And I think it was probably my 30th birthday, and my friends were getting married and having babies. And I was like, "Okay, I can't actually travel and move around forever. Maybe I should just go home." And I knew London was only ever to have the time of my life for 2 years. And, when I was there, I lived it up. I made sure to do everything I ever wanted in London, the travel that I could do. And I ended up moving home. It was just the right time. I had a job, and they had let me work in London for the 2 years. And they were kind of like, "You know what? You need to come home now." So it just felt a natural move. And then once I got home, I was really happy to stay at home. And once I settled, I realized it is a place that, I love, and all the people are there that I wanted to be with. So
so here
that.
you are. I'm not analyzing every part of your life here. And then what happened? And then what happened? But I do want to see, like, I'm like maybe kind of the milestones for you, And I know for, well, for all of us who have children, having your first baby, is one of those times. And so I kind of wanted to ask you about that and about, I know it's maybe not the first thing that occurs to you when you think about having your first baby, but what books you remember from that time, or was there a book? Like I remember reading a book when I had morning sickness. I still remember trying to get through a page and then putting it down. I'm like, I never want to see that book ever, ever again. But I do. You see, I'm picking out a negative experience. You would have picked out some beautiful moment there.
No.
But you do you have a book from that time or that you can remember?
Well, I was working in my current role, running the Dublin Book Festival. So I would have been reading all of the Irish writers. So that would have been, I was quite focused in that I got pregnant. When did I get pregnant? So I got pregnant in the summer and I was due to have Jack March. And the festival, Dublin Book Festival at the time, happened in March. And I remember finding out and figuring out my dates. And I was like, oh dear, what am I going to do? I can't do the festival. I can't. I love this job. And I remember talking with Michael O'Brien, who had employed me at the time. And I had a wonderful relationship with Michael. He was such a great supporter. And I said to him, Michael, I can't come back because I am pregnant. I'm going to have a baby in March. And he was like, all right, well, when could you run a festival? And I was like, I don't know, maybe November. And he was like, right, we'll move the festival to November then. And we moved the festival to November. So I was very focused in that I had to get all the reading done before Jack was born. And then in between, like I breastfed, so I would be feeding Jack and reading the books to program for the festival. So he was born in March and I was programming, you know, through my pregnancy and through my early baby feedings.
My jaws just hit the ground. I am in awe that you did that through that whole process. That is amazing. Also, then we know why the Dublin Book Festival is in November, and it's because of Jack or
Yeah,
because of
because of
you.
Jack. Yeah. So we would have been kind of the first festival of the season as such in March. So it was a really nice slot, but actually we never changed once we moved to November, just stayed in November. And actually it was always a really nice spot to have it in because then it was pre-Christmas. And at the time there were no other festivals in October or November. Or I don't even think there was one in September. You know, it was only probably 6 years in or 7 years in the past few years, festivals have started, you know, came into October, November. So yeah, I was just really reading the books that were coming out in Ireland during that time.
When did you start with Dublin Book Festival?
So that was in 2010. I had moved home. Oh, I moved back from London actually 2010. I was working in corporate event management and I was trying to make a move into the arts. I'd been wanting to, you know, I wanted to get into the book world. And when I came home, I did a volunteer in Fighting Words and absolutely loved it, loved working with the children, loved everything about it. I then covered a maternity leave in the Arc, which again, I loved. I've always loved working with children. So it kind of, you know, it tied in really nicely. And then I really realized, you know, I loved the books. I really wanted to work within the books. And the role for the Dublin Book Festival came up. I went in, Michael O'Brien, and was it Jack Hart interviewed me and someone else? And you know, I remember just going in and really enjoying talking to them. And I had been to the, when I lived in London, I used to go to all the different book festivals. And I remember going to Hay Festival and thinking, why don't we have this in Ireland? And so, you know, I was like, in Hay, they've got these programs for families and for children. And in Ireland, it wasn't being done at all. So that's what I wanted to bring. And that in my initial presentation was, this is what I want. This is what I would bring. And they took me on. And that was the first thing I did, brought in the family and the children's program, schools program. And that was it. And at the same time, I actually got a dream job of writing the Time Out Guide to Ireland as well. So that was, I got the two roles within the same 2 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And then met my husband as well. So I was like, oh, I'm very busy, actually. Do you want to travel Ireland?
A hat trick. Oh, good things do come in threes then. So that's
Yeah.
nice. I don't think it's fair to ask you if you have a book from the decade or whatever that you've been programming the festival. That's not fair, is it, to say if you have a highlight? Because of course everyone is special and all the authors are special and all the events are brilliant and all the rest of
Yeah.
it. But like, could I ask, is there one, is there a, and I don't mean like, I just mean like an experience maybe that stands out or a connection with an author that stands out for you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. We had, there's been so many. You know, I remember Donal Ryan's first book and having him at the festival and then seeing him come up. And I love seeing that. Yeah. And seeing Jen Carson. Like, I remember her first book. And I'm trying to think the
Malcolm
publisher.
Orange Disappears. It was
Yes,
Malcolm Orange Disappears, and I
yeah.
think it was Liberties, wasn't it, back then?
Liberties, that's it. Like I remember a few authors coming out of Liberties that, you know, reading, going, geez, these are really good. And then watching them grow and become, you know, like we've got Donal Ryan this year with Roddy Doyle, and it's booked out with 400 people. We could have kept selling it, but, you know, we just can't fit more people in. And it's amazing to see so many of the emerging authors kind of rising and coming out into the world. And then I do remember having Mike McCormack and Kevin Barry together years ago. And I can't remember, we were certainly in Smock Alley at the time. And I remember Mike with his hat, and you know, his kind of cowboy style hat, and Kevin, and they were both quirky and funny, and just it was just a really, really lovely event. And then another event, and do you know what? Oh my God, her name, the second name's dropped out of my head, and you'll know when I say it. We had Alice Taylor and the travel writer Dervla. Such a gorgeous event. And just listening to the different stories. And I guess, you know, for me, the stories of the travel, and they were two completely different characters. I don't know how I matched them. It was very odd, but it worked so beautifully. And what, you know, Alice is so gentle and such a lady. And Derva was, you know, is witty and dry. And the two of them worked so well together at the, you know, it was a really beautiful event. And I think it was Sean Rocks who interviewed them together. So it worked really well. But there's been so many. It's so hard, you know, in COVID, I think that was, we did a lot of filming. And so there was no audience. And it was the first time that I got to sit through an entire program that I had done, every single event. And I remember just sitting there going, wow, this is, you know, these events are brilliant. I
I'm a
should spend
survivor.
more. You know, I was stressed and running between five different venues and jumping on bikes and in cars. And, you know, it was actually a really special experience. And seeing the authors come in, and they were like, oh my God, I'm in a venue. And I know it's not a big audience, but it was me and, you know, a couple of the cameramen. And, you know, it was just really, really special. And we had Graham Norton in Kevin Street Library. And it almost felt like he was, you know, and Rick O'Shane, they were talking, and Graham would be cracking jokes and looking at me because I was really the only audience member. And I was like, wow, I've got my own event for, you know, from Graham. So that was, you know, really special. And then I think it was the following year we were allowed live audiences. And I think I cried at pretty much every single event, and I couldn't stop crying all weekend. I was like, oh my God, am I pregnant or what is wrong? I think Evan was so full of emotion. And so many different emotions. There was, you know, there was happiness, there was grief, there was isolation, and you could, you know, the conversations were quite dark, yet they were always tinged with a bit of hope and happiness. And then I suppose, you know, everyone was just so happy to be around other people, people with that same love of books. And for so many of us, the books were our salvation during that time. So yeah, there's been so much. It's every year is different. Every year is very special for different reasons.
Julianne, I'm going to ask you a hard question and feel free to say no, because a lot of people just say no, no books are left in the house to burn. All books are sacred. I can't do it. But if you did have a book, and again, I say this to people, it's the spirit of it is mischievous. It's not like, oh, you know, we're not actually burning books a la, you know, the fascists. That's not what we're talking. You have read many, many, many books, and you've been in touch with many, many authors, but like, is there one book that, you know, maybe you just thought, you know what, I'd happily just let that go.
Let that one go. It probably one from school. Oh, what was that one? I just remember reading through school and going, oh my God, why does she have to make everything have a meaning behind it? Why do I need to understand every sentence, every word, and just everything behind it? So probably that one that I can't remember. And another one would be, what was that other book? The one that came out and everyone was reading, and it was all about manifestation, and nobody would stop talking about this book. And eventually I bought this book and was like, what is this about? And it was basically like, if you think of it, it will come. And I am very much, I'm very positive. And I do believe in, you know, positive thinking. And, you know, I'd always say it to my son. I'm like, you know, we all feel a bit rubbish in the morning. We don't want to do this. We don't want to do that. But think about the good things that are going to happen in the day. But this book was basically such false hope, and for the vulnerable, and I remember a friend being in a bad spot at the time, and she was reading this book, hoping, she was like, "You have to read it. It's really good. I'm manifesting my whole future." And I was just like, "Oh my God." Read the book and thought, you know what? This is just playing on the vulnerable. So I probably burned that book. In fact, I probably have. No idea where
I
it
endorse this comment. Okay, that can go, that
is.
can burn. And then the last one is about not a, one of your lovely dogs and your lovely new puppy, and obviously not your children, but something that's not a book or a beloved animal. If there is something that you would save that isn't a book, an animal, or a person, if your house is on fire and it's just one thing you can run out with, what would it be?
I've got a picture here. Now, my husband will kill me because I am grabbing my wedding photos, but that's because we've got our wedding photos on a stick and everything. But I do have a photo of my family. So I can actually show it to you. And it is all of us together. So I think I'm one in it. And my mum said a man came knocking at the door. And he said, do you want me to take a photo of your family? And we all happened to be there. And she said, okay, everybody run upstairs. And I could, it's this maybe the story behind it that I know my mom, for years I thought this was in, some fancy place with the floral carpet and the velvet curtains. But it was actually just this man at the door. And mom told us all to get dressed up, throw on our finest, come downstairs. And they closed the living room curtains. Sat on this manky green chair that we have, and that's our family photo. And all of us have a printout of it in our house. Yeah, I think I'll probably take that.
We're saving that. That's perfect, Julianne. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Ruth.
You've been listening to Director of Dublin Book Festival, Julianne Mooney Syron. See you all next time.